Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Sabres in a playoff spot? And they only scored one goal and a win?
Breaking news, playoffs start now.
There we go.
No, not actually. It'd be great, though.
UB football?
In a bowl game?
And they keep
soon,
winning.
Hopefully.
Pete Lembo doing things as a first-year head coach not done since 1897.
Also, real quick, Sean Dolak.
Dude. Good sports night for Buffalo.
Two very interceptions good sports and, night. And an interception return for a touchdown. And hurdle the dude.
He did hurdle the dude.
Like,
very, very good sports
ran
night
ran across
Buffalo.
The field twice, too, in that return. He starts on the right hash, goes left, goes back to the right, and then... Also, great blocking from
I was
going to
say, Sean Dolak like, did also tweet out like the video, and he's yeah. like, look at that blocking.
Right, and they're like guiding him, too. Like the one guy's like directing him like a
oh.
you know, the airplane guys with
yep.
the little orange sticks. They're not traffic controllers. That's the guys in the tower. Who are the guys with the sticks?
Just like, not a clue. I know exactly who they are.
You know what I'm talking about.
Not a clue, though.
I don't know what their actual title is, but whoever they are, that's what those defenders for UB did last night for Sean Dolak.
It was beautiful.
And not to mention the 90-yard touchdown to start the game.
Like, oh, to J.J. Jenkins.
Yeah.
Big plays. Big
awesome.
Plays all day.
Awesome. Awesome night from UB.
Great night for Buffalo sports. Great night for UB and the Sabres. Again, the Sabres, if you don't know, won 1-0 last night over the Kings. They went 1-for-3 on the power play.
Exhilarating.
Zucker again scores a power play goal. That's
also,
what he does.
Sabres penalty kill, 0-5. Or 5-for-5, I should
five
say.
5-for-5.
LA Kings power play, 0-for-5.
We're going to have Paul Hamilton on at 10:30. He's also jumping on from 12 to 1 with Brayton Wilson as well. We're going to have a fun day today. No Sabres Live or One Bills Live as they take off for the Bills bye week today and tomorrow. But yeah, I'm very excited. It was fun to wake up to this morning. I woke up from a text from you, and then it was something about the Sabres, and I was like, the Sabres won? Oh, fantastic! I immediately go to my score app, all right, let's see how they won. They won 1-0?
They closed out a close game.
I was like, what?
Yeah. I got up this morning, too, and I saw, I have, the tweet notifications, and all I saw was... The latest tweet that I had gotten at probably 1:30 in the morning was a tweet from the Sabres, and that's how you get a dub. And I was like, oh, cool, they won.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't look at my phone until I got to work, and I was like, oh, yeah, I should probably check the score, get some highlights. And then I was like, oh, huh. Well, that's
right,
fun.
Right?
And then I watched a condensed game while I'm here, and it's like, oh, man, UPL. Not playing in 10 days, then comes back and gets his first shutout of the year. Good for him.
And again, as you mentioned, Kings had five power plays. Yeah. 0-for-5 on there. I mean, yeah. Great job
That's
by the defense.
Too,
great job by UPL.
The Sabres probably Achilles heel so far has been the fact that they can't stop taking power plays at the worst possible time. And that's like the most frustrating thing if you're a Sabres fan right now is the fact that they take so many penalties. And it's kind of refreshing to see that they can actually kill them off effectively in this game at least. And I'm not sure what LA's power play is, but you know, maybe they're middling. I'm not sure. But the fact that you could stop them, whereas the last time you played them, they did score a power play goal because you took a stupid penalty at the end of the game in the home opener. It's just kind of nice to see them turn that around.
Their power play percentage, though, I think this is after last night, is at 14.3%, which is good for 29th in the league. So, not great.
Yeah, not great.
Not good.
Sabres power play, however, since, what was the date? Jeremy had this earlier.
I mean, regardless.
The Sabres power play has been insane lately.
It's been a top five unit, I believe, but through the whole season now, it is up to 17th in the league, 18.6%. So,
wow.
I mean, they've
turned it around.
They've turned it around. And they're playing. They're tough. And I did want to start here today, just because I said last night on the nightcap before, kind of like a little giving my little thoughts on the game as I wrapped up the nightcap. They have such poor games against Montreal and Philadelphia, but then such good, you know, bounce back game against St. Louis, good games against the Rangers and what have you. And they just they keep you around is maybe my biggest thing. They keep you invested for a good portion of the season in what they can do. But for them to be able to put these performances up without Tage Thompson, who I think is their one true elite player, at least on the forward lines, it is incredibly, not incredibly impressive, but it is impressive that they're able to do this. They're somewhat taking advantage of a weak Atlantic division. We'll hope now. I mean, I think the LA game was easily their hardest game of this road trip. Now they've got San Jose and Anaheim, both not good teams really at all. They should be able to win both those games, especially after you get the hardest one out of the way and got it done without Tage Thompson. And even Jordan Greenway's hurt as well, who, I mean, he's fairly important to this team, especially when it comes to, you know, causing turnovers and such.
Yeah. I am interested to see what they're going to do in that back-to-back.
Yeah.
If it really is going to be Reimer, if they're going to just let UPL go.
No, I think in the back-to-back, you're going to get Reimer. The real thing is Levi's not flying all the way over to
no,
do that.
No, Levi did have a good game for Rochester last night, though. He made a big save on it wasn't an odd man rush, but it was just kind of like a backdoor scenario, and he got over and made a big save, and it's, you know, it. I saw a tweet at the end of the show yesterday talking about Dustin Wolf, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, if for those that don't know, that's Calgary's goaltender. He's, I think, a year or two older than Devon Levi, so he's got a little bit more experience because they've kind of came up the same way.
Yep.
Dustin Wolf played in the WHL, which is where Dylan Cousins came from and a few other Sabres players from the past. But Zach Benson came from the WHL too. So Dustin Wolf was dominant in the WHL. Insanely good numbers, really good goaltender, and then he gets drafted by Calgary, goes to their AHL team. He puts up great numbers in the AHL in his first season, much like Devon Levi did in his first season in Rochester. Plays a little bit for the Flames at the end of that season, does okay. Mm-hmm. Next year comes in, starts on the Flames, plays 22 games and looks terrible. Goes back to the AHL, does great. Next year he comes back and that's this year, and he's been great. They have really needed him. That Flames team doesn't have much to look forward to recently because you have bad contracts with Jonathan Huberdeau. You don't have Matthew Tkachuk anymore. There's a lot left to be desired if you're the Calgary Flames right now. But the one thing is, your young goalie, who was just 22 years old when you tried to force him into the NHL, is now figuring it out.
You talk about that.
Again, look at Devon Levi.
With Calgary's AHL team playing 55 games, just over 2 goals against per game. His save percentage, .932. Saves, just over 1550.
Yeah.
Or
no,
just
yeah.
under 1550.
That's the thing, is like he went crazy for them.
And then, last year, I mean, over 3 goals against, under .900 save percentage. And now, this year, he's back to that under.
How many games has he played this year?
He has played 10 games so far.
Okay. Yeah. So he's, I think it's him and. Who's splitting with him? Because it's not Markstrom.
One second, I'll look this up. But yeah,
I always forget that Markstrom's in New Jersey now. It's kind of one of those moves that just kind of happened.
Dan Vladar.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Vladar was...
Oh, he's a number in the 80s as a goalie. Oh.
he's one of those... He was a career backup when he was in Boston, and then he went over to Calgary and kind of... He's kind of a... I don't even know what to call him, really. He's like a 1B sort of goaltender. Maybe a little bit worse than a 1B, but still same kind of thing.
He's played in 9 games, though.
Yeah. No, he's okay. He's good, but Dustin Wolf is eventually going to be their guy.
They are getting good numbers, though, out of both their goalies. Both under 3 goals against... Both are in the positive, or well, no. Vladar has 4 losses, never mind. But both have a shutout, both over 900 save percentage. I mean, they're getting good numbers out of their
goals. And the Flames are second in the division, which even though I was just saying how much they need to work on some things, they've been winning games.
Good goalies.
I didn't realize they were that good this season so far, because last year they were not good.
Yeah, good goalies are going to get you games. You look, though, at Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's stats for the Sabres, and I think that's a big thing for me too is he's also a young guy, and you can kind of argue he's sort of not exactly like Dustin Wolf, but he has also been a guy that he was originally the high, you know, level prospect. He was the guy that I think in Cincinnati at the time, their ECL,
ECHL, yeah,
he was like, that's the guy, you're just waiting for Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen to get here.
I remember the problem when Luukkonen was in the ECHL and even in the AHL, it was almost like he was too fast. The timing was not there. He was not able to transition to the timing, and it looked so much worse than it was. Like, if you look at his numbers in Cincinnati, he was terrible. Like, it looked awful. But you also look at the highlights, and he'd be getting to where he needed to be, and then just...
But he was early.
He'd be way too early, and then he'd be thrown off, and, you know, stuff happens. But I think the thing with Levi that we have to remember is what I just brought up about Dustin Wolf there, is the fact that you can have this generational goaltender, but he's only 22. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is 25. He's going to turn 26 this season.
That's one of my favorite things, too. Again, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is not like he's 32 years old. And you're like, sure, he's in his prime now, but how long?
And what's it actually going to amount to? But this is, I think we're still seeing the ascent of Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. And I think it's only going to get better with the more opportunity he gets. That's why it's kind of crucial that Levi went down. But it's also good for Levi because he's going to keep playing. He's only an hour away when you're at home, so it's not really that hard to think, hey, if the Sabres have a back-to-back at home, Levi could drive up and be ready for the next game the next day. You know, obviously, like, we were just talking, like, out west, there's no way that Levi is going to fly out tonight or tomorrow night and play on Saturday. That's just kind of crazy. Who knows? They've done it before, but I doubt that would happen. But... I look at the Sabres team and seeing what Luukkonen was able to do last year after kind of being the guy, that right there is what makes me excited for the rest of this season, is the fact that you know he gets better the more he plays. And with this new style that Lindy Ruff has them playing, I really think it's going to benefit Luukkonen and the team itself.
You know, the key for Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, too, not even the ECHL, his 1 year there, 2019-2020, 23 games played, 912 save percentage, 224 goals against.
Oh, it wasn't that bad. I thought it was...
No, it's the Rochester years.
Oh, that he's okay.
Bad. It's the AHL where it's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Most of those are under 900, over 3 goals against.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's weird. And then in Buffalo... He's much better.
Yep.
And so your point is still correct in the sense of, like, it's almost like he was moving too fast for the AHL.
Yeah.
And now with the NHL, it's like, okay, this is perfect speed for me. I got this.
Mm-hmm.
He still has moments where he frustrates me, don't get me wrong. And I think I still have some scar tissue.
The Montreal game was one of them. But at the same time, you have to remember, he was playing hurt in the Montreal game.
Yeah.
Minor hurt, whatever you want to call it.
I think for me, a lot of it is I still have scar tissue from 22-23.
Yeah. When the goalies couldn't make a save at all.
And I do mean that honestly. Like, I think that's a lot of it. And that will, especially for a goaltender, and you know that's such a fickle position that, you know, from year to year it can go. And he didn't start out this year all that awesome. But really, since then, outside of the Montreal game, in which we found out afterwards, he was kind of dealing with an injury, which kept him out for a little while.
10 days. And then he comes back and he gets his first shutout of the year, 6th shutout of his career.
Yep.
Also, big thing, he signed for a long term. Yep. Longer term, I should say. He's got 4 years left on his deal. Just signed it in the offseason, that's big.
Now the key is to get Thompson healthy, get him back. I do like how they're playing that, Josh. I really do.
How much... It's hard because I didn't really get to watch the game. I only saw the condensed version.
Mm-hmm.
how much do you think they're missing Jordan Greenway right now? Because he's been one of those players this year where he's, up until this point, he was just kind of forced into a role that was, wasn't working. But now it seems like Lindy Ruff has found a way to unlock his style of play when he was playing with McLeod and Zucker. And even when he was away from the two of them, like if it was just one of them with him or he was with a line, a completely different line entirely, he's kind of been told to, hey, this is your, this is the way you play. Just do this. We have guys that can do everything else. You got to do this. And that's been great so far. Greenway has been that kind of bruiser, fourth line, third line, checking guy, but he also has the ability to score goals. It's not like, you know, him being on the third or fourth line is a detriment to him. It's the fact that that's where he's the most valuable because he can be on the forecheck. He can create offensive turnovers. He can create offensive opportunities off those turnovers because he does have a little bit of skill to him, but he uses that size to kind of create that offensive skill. But I feel like, again, it's hard because I didn't see the game last night fully, but him as a player like that, I feel like is very valuable for this team in the way they play. Because, again, that's kind of how we've always seen Lindy Ruff teams.
Thompson has been the headline.
Right, obviously, because he's your top producer.
But with Greenway, it's now it's also sort of a waiting, you know, you're kind of in a waiting situation with him because you're like, he is important to them. He does cause kind of chaos. He was one of their few bright spots early in the year as well.
And to be fair too, he's not the only one that plays like this now though. Because that's the thing in the past is Sabres teams in the past have had that player, but it's only been one. Like if you want to look back, Zemgus Girgensons. As much as we faulted Zemgus Girgensons for all of his negatives, he was great at certain things in terms of physicality and things like that. You only had him, and he wasn't necessarily the best. He wasn't as good as Jordan Greenway is, but he was that type of player for you. But that was all you had. But now you have a guy like Jordan Greenway. You have Jason Zucker, who has been everything this team could have hoped and dreamed for. And you also have Ryan McLeod, who is the most offensive of the three. Zucker is also there, for sure. But I think that Zucker has that bit of edge to him that McLeod doesn't fully have. But Zucker has like more offensive ability than, let's say, Jordan Greenway, right? Yeah. And that's what makes the three of them such a great line because they all play the same, but they all like improve each other's negatives, and Zucker's kind of that middleman.
Yep. Currently in the Atlantic now, Toronto leads the way, 20 games played, 12 wins, 26 points. Florida, 19 games played, 12 wins, 25 points. Tampa Bay, 17 games played, 10 wins, 21 points. And then the Buffalo Sabres, 19 games played, 9 wins, 19 points.
So you're 2 points behind the Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good spot to be in, I think, because the Lightning are one of those teams where you've been waiting so many years for them to fall off.
Yep.
Unfortunately, they go out and got Jake Gensel in the offseason, so it makes it a little harder, but I think they're definitely someone that you could have topple.
The frustrating thing is just in this month, November, two teams that are below you, and quite comfortably, Detroit and Montreal, you lost to both.
Yeah, yeah, but you did beat Detroit once. It was a 1-1 split,
but
Montreal lost. That hurts.
That one hurts, especially, and I was saying here to start the show, too, it's like, this is also a team that beat Calgary, beat the Rangers, destroyed Ottawa, you know, bounced back against St. Louis.
Yeah.
And this is just in this month.
I think those
are wins to be a good playoff team. I don't think just to even be a playoff team, to be a good playoff team, you got to win those games.
Yeah.
Especially Montreal, goalies just didn't show up. Now, we kind of know now is Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen had an ailment. That probably did play a part into it. But even then, you scored 5 goals. You need to win that game. You need to win that game. Detroit, 2-1 loss. I mean, that's not great.
Especially
for a team that's 8th in goals right now in the league.
The one thing that does hurt you a little bit is that the Atlantic is so painfully bad.
Yeah, so mid. Oh, my goodness.
That you have to wonder what that's going to do for that wild card. Because remember, two metropolitan teams could get the wild card.
Correct.
But right now, the team that's behind you, you're tied with technically, but they're behind you because of games played, I think, is the New York Islanders.
Games played are actually both 19.
Oh, okay.
I think so it's going to be goal difference.
It might be goal difference or record because the Sabres have more regulation wins. The Islanders are more.
Yeah, there might be a few things here. The Islanders are 7-7-5. Buffalo's 9-9-1. The goal difference, though, Buffalo +1, Islanders -7.
Maybe that is that then. I tiebreakers get a little confusing sometimes in the NHL.
I only care about them by like March.
Yeah, right. That's but when but I care. looking at that though, that's my one worry is because you look at the top of the Metro, and the best team in the Atlantic is tied for third in the Metropolitan Division. That's the Maple Leafs, who are at 26 points. The best team in the Metropolitan is the Carolina Hurricanes at 28.
Which, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, and the Capitals. Where did they come from? Why did...
Well, it does... Well, like, I want to keep an eye on them now. We were all talking about them because of Ovechkin and chasing the goal record. He was also on his fastest pace
ever. Yeah.
That maybe played a part into it of him being the leading NHL goal scorer.
And now he's week to week.
And he's 39.
Yep.
Which his body does not heal that fast. This is the guy that drinks Coca-Cola out of a water bottle during games. I get he's a freak, but it only is going to get you so far.
In terms of Ovechkin breaking the record, this really sucks. In terms of the Capitals playoff standings and season, it sucks
also
for them. Like, it really sucks for them because he's been a big bright spot in their team. And also, Dylan Strome.
Yes.
Coming in and being the next Nicholas Backstrom is just insane.
Dylan Strome actually leads them in points as well, 22 assists.
Yeah, because he's just assisting Ovi. Yeah. Like, he's just feeding Ovi like Backstrom used to do. So I think that's a big key to their success, and I'm interested to see how this continues as Ovechkin is out now.
They have not yet played without him. They play tonight at home against Colorado.
Okay.
Then they've got Jersey, at Florida, at Tampa. They've got a stretch there.
Yeah.
They've got a stretch there.
Right. And so, I go back to a little bit worried about the fact that the Atlantic looks so much different in points-wise. But it doesn't – just because the Atlantic's bad doesn't mean you have to be bad, right? Like, that's the thing.
My frustrating part yesterday was I was like, but you're also part of the problem.
Right.
You're not part of the solution.
Yeah. But so you look at the Sabres and where they could be – in terms of a playoff spot, that third divisional spot is the one to aim for, obviously. It's the most secure. You can guarantee that you're in. The wild card ones just get a little froggy with the two divisions coming together. I wish they just went back to the old just eight teams. Top eight teams make it. So forget about the divisions. Who cares? There's no rivalries anymore. It's teams you play a lot that beat you up, and then that's it. There's no real rivalries. Unless they've been rivalries for 100 years, like the Canadians and the Bruins.
Everyone in the Bruins.
Or the Battle of Florida or the Battle of Alberta. Like, those are the only real rivalries anymore. Who cares about these divisions? Just get rid of them. Abolish them.
I don't want to make it harder for the Sabres.
Stop. No, they wouldn't make it harder. It would make it easier, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Because if you look at the top eight teams right now in the division, or in the conference, I should say. Hold on. I have to pull this up. I'm looking at it in a weird way.
You would be tied with, you're tied with the Islanders and
right,
Boston.
But you're ahead
points.
Of the Islanders.
Yep.
And Boston.
You might be the eighth team currently.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you got Carolina, Washington, Toronto, New Jersey, New York, Florida, Tampa, Buffalo. Buffalo's the eighth team right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just saying.
For now.
Just saying.
We'll say, though, real quick, why we're talking about playoffs here. I saw a stat. I think it's a lot of people do know it. Like 80% of teams that are in a playoff spot by Thanksgiving make it. And Thanksgiving is next Thursday. It is exactly a week away.
Hey,
and the
that's
Sabres
fun.
Have, and the Sabres have two games this week. That their hardest game in the Western road trip was last night.
Yes.
The LA Kings.
Yep.
San Jose is bad. Anaheim is bad.
Let's not write off Anaheim fully yet.
Anaheim is bad.
Nope. I don't want to write them off fully.
Anaheim is bad.
Points-wise, they're not great, but they're also only 1 point less than you.
They're 8-2.
Yeah.
They've also won three in a row, though. That's a big part of it.
Uh-huh. And you know why? Most of that is on their goaltender, Lucas Dostal. He was kind of coming up the same time as Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
This man is Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen last year. He's 5-6-2. But he's got a .269 goals against and .924 save percentage.
Yeah.
He is working miracles and losing games.
Yes. He is getting his team to the point where here's a win. No, sorry, buddy. We can't win tonight.
Yeah, we're not gonna do that.
Like that's what it is. And then, you know, they have John Gibson come back from injury too, and he's 3-0. So that's great.
They are 29th in the league in goals.
I know. That's a big problem. Trevor Zegras got on that NHL cover and then forgot how to play hockey.
Did he ever know? That's the question.
I think he did. I don't understand what's wrong with him.
But they've got them on Friday night. That's another Sabres After Dark. That's a 10 o'clock tip-off.
10 o'clock, not 10:30.
10 o'clock puck drop.
Hey, save a half an hour. It's a Friday.
There's only two games tonight, too. Jets Penguins at 7, and then you at 10.
Oh, boy.
That's
it. Jets Penguins. Woo.
Jets are kind of cool. And then Saturday.
You're right. The Jets are cool this year.
And then Saturday, again, that's the back-to-back. Mm-hmm. San Jose. San Jose is objectively terrible.
Yes, that is that I will give you, because Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith are fun, but other than that, they are bad. And hey, but that night, Joe Thornton's number retirement. So if you want to watch that.
That's right. They are 31st in goals against. They've given up 73 already this year.
The Sharks?
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Man.
Let's go.
That's a number.
Although they're pretty good on the penalty kill, 81%.
Great. That's where the Sabres power play streak's gonna run to an end. You know it.
It's going to be
you know
the
it.
Sharks.
There it
They'll
is.
Finally get a ton of calls. They'll have like six chances going for six.
because that doesn't make any sense. Why are the Sharks so good at their penalty kill?
They might not be actually taking many penalties.
That's true. But that's the thing, though, that's so funny about like looking at bad teams is like they can be like the worst team in the league, and then all of a sudden, but they're the best penalty killing team. They just get in the corners and
it's also
and
why hockey's a weird sport, because then like one thing changes next year, and you're all of a sudden it's like, no, they're a playoff team.
It's kind of crazy.
They
looking
won 30 at, games last year, but they're a playoff team now.
It's kind of crazy looking at their goaltenders too, because they have Mackenzie Blackwood and Vitek Vanacek, who have both had great seasons over the past few years, but now it's just not working out. Both of them over 3 goals against. One of them's under in 900 save percentage at .899.
Yeah.
So, tough times for the Sharks. I want them to be good because they're fun when they're good.
They were good when we were younger.
And they were also good, but they were good recently, too. I mean, remember, it was Vegas's first year in the playoffs.
That's right, yep.
And it was that series was insane. Yep. I remember watching Cody Eakin just destroy someone in like a really bad hit. Like, it should not have been. He probably should have. I think he did get kicked out of the game, but there was a big fight afterwards. I just remember that specifically from that series.
They were always the team for me, just thinking of like a Western Conference team that just never got over. I mean, obviously we know, but they were always like the best team in the West and would lose then in either the conference championship or the second round.
They were the Bills.
Always the bridesmaid.
They were the Bills to the. And then the Kings were like the Chiefs.
For a little while, the Kings.
Because the Kings were and the Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
And
just always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Yeah.
But they'd show up to that wedding season thinking that ring's coming.
Right, exactly. Because like I said, like if you look at, again, this is a very loose comparison, but you look at what the Bills and Chiefs have done over the past few years, and you look at what the Sharks were able to do in the early 2000s, and it's like kind of like, hey, you were always there, but you just never could get there. And
got their nails done.
Yeah.
Got a nice dress.
They were ready to
hired
go.
Hired a photographer. Boyfriend doesn't even show up. 803-0550, the number to call. Also, I want to talk a little bit on UB's win last night. And, of course, we do have Thursday night football tonight. It is Thursday night football, though. Not ideal. But coming up after a quick timeout, Paul Hamilton joins the show to talk more on the Sabres' 1-0 win last night over the LA Kings. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Charged with the kill and watching this guy. Kopitar, nifty stick handling to gain the zone. Kempe to the far circle. Near side post, saved by Lukanen. Oh, how did he get that left leg down there to make the stop? Still scoreless in this game.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. One of Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's 23 saves in last night's shutout 1-0 win over the LA Kings. And for more on that, we go to the Western Hotline. Paul Hamilton joins the show. Paul, how many cup of coffees are you on already? Late night, early morning, long afternoon. How are we doing today, man?
None. I don't drink or eat caffeine.
Really?
I wish I could be like that.
That's crazy. I have to have at least two cups of coffee every
day. I like the smell of coffee. I just can't stand the taste of it.
What about, so not even like a coffee flavored ice cream or like anything like that?
Well, that's interesting because I don't eat a lot of candy or anything like that, but if you were to ask me what my favorite candy bar is, I would tell you Coffee Crisp.
Huh.
So how do you explain that?
No, that's
interesting.
Good. I like that.
That's cool.
So Paul, last night 1-0 win over the Kings. Zucker, another power play goal. Way to get 2 points, I guess, for me. I got to watch the condensed version, but it seemed like just wait to finish it out.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a bit of a boring game. I mean, they only had three shots in the second period because they spent the most of the second period killing penalties. So they really never could get in the offensive zone to do anything because they were busy killing penalties, which they did a good job of. But again, the penalty problem reared its ugly head. And if they didn't do a good job of penalty killing, we'd be sitting here talking about a loss. So, you know, they Lindy Ruff still has not gotten through to them yet as far as penalties go. Between the 18:35 mark of the first period and the 16:12 mark of the second period, they gave Los Angeles four power plays. And then they gave another one in the third. But the good news is the Kings only got four shots on the five power plays. So the Buffalo did a very nice job of killing penalties, and they had to, or they wouldn't have won the game.
Yeah, it seemed like a very good defensive effort. You said there, I mean, the Kings go 0 for 5 on the power play. The Sabres, though, how much, Paul, do you think they're missing Tage Thompson? This is a team that is top 10 in goal scoring up to this point this year, but just one goal last night. Or is this them, for the second time against L.A., kind of getting goal lead and just being able to get one past them?
Well, they're 2-1 without Thompson so far in these three games. I still scratch my head how the two goalies weren't the number one and two stars in that game. They weren't. I thought if you ask who was the best player for either team, it was their goalie. Rittich in the first period, both goalies played very well in the first period. Rittich didn't have much to do in the second period, but Rittich in the third, you know, other than the one goal, which the only goal of the game was a tip. You know, other than that, the two goalies couldn't be beaten. So I thought they both played very, very well. You know, made some great saves along the way, looking in more than Rittich did. But it was a night of a goaltender's, I thought.
Paul, it was a big night for Lukanen coming back 10 days not playing and then getting his first shutout of the year. I mean, it's a pretty good performance. It's basically all you could ask for and more. You know, like it's especially after sending Devin Levi down like that, it was a much needed goaltending performance.
Well, he was on his way. I mean, he had played 9 of 10 games. If you take the Montreal game out of the equation, which is a game he played hurt in and then got pulled after 40 minutes, he stopped all 23 shots last night. Calgary stopped 24-26. The Rangers 25-26. Ottawa 37-38. And Detroit 21-23. So he had started this going once he started playing more. It's as simple as that. He has to play for him to be effective. And, you know, he played 9 out of 10 games, and he started playing like he did last year. And if you go down the stretch last year, he played more than any other goaltender in the NHL. And that's when he really thrives, is when he's able to do that.
So on that, with them having a back-to-back Friday, Saturday, Anaheim, San Jose, do you think Reimer gets in Saturday, or are they just going to maybe ride the hot hand with Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen? As you said, like he plays well.
Yeah, can he go 3 and 4? I would think, since you know he's well rested, he probably could. He didn't have a lot of shots per se last night, but he did have to make some great saves last night. That's for sure. I would think Reimer probably plays one of the games, but you know that's not for sure. And I think I would think for sure Luukkonen probably gets the next game, and then they see how many saves did he have to make, how did he do, could he do it the next night or not? Don't forget too, it's a night game going into an afternoon game, which probably would say Reimer would get the game.
Paul, it looks like both sides of special teams were pretty good last night, but the power play has really turned things on here in recent games. What have you seen that's been different than what we saw in the beginning of the year where they couldn't score a goal? And, I mean, now it's what? It's like 7 straight games with a power play goal?
Yeah, I mean, remember in the beginning of the year, they couldn't even get into the zone. Now, the second power play last night, they couldn't get into the zone at all. And that looked like some of the power plays in the beginning of the year. And you're right, it is 7 straight games, and now they have power play goals in 10 out of the last 11. And they're 4th in the league going into last night in that time period on the power play. And one of the biggest things is they have a guy now, like they used to have Reinhardt. Reinhardt's one of the best players in the NHL at tipping pucks. And they've missed that since he's been gone. And Zucker is very good at it also. He got the Sabres' first power play goal of the season on a tip. He tipped the one last night. He's very good with the hand-eye coordination. And, you know, that's what it took to get the goal. So I think that's part of it. He's around the net. I think the fact that a lot of guys are around the net. I think back to Cousins' power play goal where he's right off to the post and a rebound comes right to him and he puts it in the net. You know, they've scored in different ways. I mean, Dahlin had two in a row going into this game because he shot the puck. And there were guys at the net screening the goaltender. And he shot the puck, and sure enough, you know, it went in for him. So getting guys around the net, learning how to actually get into the zone, not insisting upon every single time that we're going to skate up and skate through the defense that's lined up on the blue line, understanding that sometimes you got to maybe dump it into certain areas and use your speed to get in there and get in on the forecheck and start that way. So because they were pretty bullheaded in the beginning of the year where they were going to carry the puck in no matter what. And teams figured that out. And teams also figured out if you rush them, they'll turn the puck over. And they've stopped that also. There's not near as many turnovers as they're working the puck over. But the biggest thing is they're winning battles. If you're on the power play, you have to win battles. You can't just get one chance and it's gone because you didn't win a battle to keep things going and keep it inside the zone.
On a more negative note, Paul, Jack Quinn, second lowest amount of ice time last night, only surpassed by Jiří Kulík, just over 10 and a half minutes. Where do they go with him? I mean, we're talking about guys like Zucker being able to tip goals in and what have you. The only goal, and I heard you talking about this with Sheldon Bulldog yesterday, his only goal is an empty netter. He had two shots on goal last night, but it's getting to a point. I've been saying it. He's maybe not trusting his body yet. This can't keep going, though.
No, it's to a point now where you've got the extra guy. He's a former number one pick. He was the Amherst leading scorer before he, you know, showed up. Maybe it's time to take another look at him. It's just to a point now. Now, his one of his two shots was dangerous last night, but it's the first time in a while I could say he had a dangerous opportunity. He's not even getting scoring opportunities anymore, which I think is concerning. So, you know, you look at that, no scoring opportunities. They don't really use him all that much on the penalty kill anymore. In past years, he's been one of their best penalty killers. They don't even use him to kill penalties anymore. So, you know, it's just the wheels are spinning. You got an extra guy here. He's one of your young players. Maybe give him another chance again because it's to a point the Sabres, I don't think, could afford to let him try to play out of it anymore. That's what they've been trying to do, is just let him try to play out of it, and it's just not working right now.
Could this be something they do like once they get back home? Obviously, they're out west now, but it's a rather short road trip. Could this be something, you know, next week, send him down? Because I'm at that point too, Paul. He's got to just get his confidence back. I mean, maybe go down to Rochester, score a few goals there, bring him back up. Because, yeah, right now it feels like nothing's happening for him. Where you have guys like Isak Rosén, Jiří Kulík, they're performing well.
Rosén hasn't had a chance yet, so.
No, I mean in Rochester.
And Kulík finally got a chance to play center in the NHL, which is something he hadn't gotten the opportunity to do. So, you know, they're bringing him along. You know, he's not producing either, if you want to bottom line it. I mean, he's coming along. He's learning, but you're not getting any production whatsoever out of him. And you're trying to put him in a top six position. At least he's getting some scoring chances, you know, Quinn is not. And that's the thing. I mean, he's got an elite shot. Last year, he only played around 27 games, but he was on almost a 30-goal pace in those games. And, you know, he has an elite shot, which helps him score goals. But, I just don't know. I don't know if injuries have just taken a toll on him. I don't know if his confidence is shot because of injuries, if he's, you know, if he's worried about, you know, whether he can, you know, score or not. You know, he comes down on the rush, and very often he'll stop and curl instead of trying to use his speed to keep going. That's usually a guy whose confidence isn't real high. You know, when the stop and curl, it's almost like that's a crutch move. And I don't know how long Lindy Ruff's going to go with this.
Yeah, it's been hard to watch. Last year, 27 games played, Paul, like you said, 9 goals, 19 points as well. I mean, he was a real bright spot when he was on the ice. But, Paul, you're also going to be on at 12 o'clock today with Brayton Wilson. What do you guys got cooking up for today?
Rob Ray will join us at 12:30. And we also are on tomorrow when Dan Dunleavy will join us at 12:30. So we have the Sabres broadcast team who will join us and give their words of wisdom. I know Rob is a very serious person. He will not bust my chops at all. That's not his nature to try to be funny or, give me a hard time. So he'll be entertaining, that's for sure.
Should be a lot of fun. Look forward to that. It's from 12 to 1 today and Friday. Paul, thanks so much for jumping on with us. We'll talk again later.
No problem. Take care.
That was Paul Hamilton there on the Western Hotline. And Paul's reports on WGR brought to you by Equitable Advisors, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Raylax Honda. Raylax, we got this.
Zach, do you know what today is the anniversary of?
I saw you tweet it, so I'm going to let you say it.
6 years ago today, and I just quote tweeted this, the Sabres won a game. They scored 4 goals in the first period and won their 7th straight game in a row, on their way to winning 10 games in a row.
Thompson scored in this game.
Thompson was Tage pulled off a Tage goal before he was Tage.
Like, he was just kind of like a guy.
Yeah, but the goal he scored was very much what he scores now on a regular basis.
I just watched it, and I'm like, oh, I don't remember that at all. Especially not in these dark blue uniforms.
Right, because that was like his first time doing that.
Yeah.
Also, something that's mind-boggling to me, because he's one of my favorite Sabres ever, if not my favorite Sabre ever, Jason Pominville was on this team. It's mind-boggling to me that Jason Pominville was almost on every decade so far in the 2000s. He was in the early 2000s, in the 2010s, almost made it to the 2020s, but he retired after this season in 2018, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So, great career, Jason Pominville.
I'm waiting for the Tage Thompson goal to come back, because it is really cool, like, to just see, like, this is a young version of him. Yeah, it uses his body.
Seeing some of these players,
goes
too.
Goes right to the net.
I remember Johan Larsson scoring this goal. It's the fourth goal, like 7 seconds to go in the period. And he just rips it over whatever the Flyers goaltender's name is. I don't even know who it is at this point. But he just crazy no-angle shot and just puts it top shelf. And it's like, I remember that too, of being like, wow, this Johan Larsson kid's pretty good.
Well,
super excited for him.
Super excited for him.
And he gets traded to Arizona.
The life of a Sabres fan. 803-0550, the number call. You want to talk more on the Sabres win last night and what they've got coming up? Love to talk about that. We'll also touch on the Bills as well. We haven't really been able to do that at all today. I want to talk about the AFC playoff race. I think that's really exciting and kind of how that's shaping up. We'll do that as well. And, of course, UB football. We have not gotten a touch yet on that, but a very impressive stat I want to talk about here as well. Again, 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Mint on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
It's the most wonderful time.
Welcome back into the Extra Point Show. We are a week away from Thanksgiving, so it's socially acceptable to start playing Christmas music. I've been playing it since November 1st. Zach, guess what I did yesterday?
This is really gross by you. What'd you do yesterday?
I decorated my apartment for Christmas. I'm ready. It's here.
Are you a fake tree guy?
Well, we had a fake tree last year because it was our first year in the apartment, and we weren't sure how the cats were going to react to it. So we are talking about getting a real tree this year because the cats were nice to the tree last year. So, hey, think we're going to get a real tree. So we don't have the tree yet, but everything else is up. The garland, the lights, decorations, everything.
Not even giving Thanksgiving its due.
We had the Yule log on the TV. We had Christmas records on the record player, Bing Crosby, Charlie Brown.
That is good, though. That is good.
Nothing more soothing than a Yule log and Bing Crosby singing White Christmas.
On December 1st.
November 20th for me.
November 20th.
Zach.
Not even giving Thanksgiving its due. We have still not even sniffed snow yet.
What do you mean? I'm having 2 Thanksgivings next week. I'm giving it enough of its due. 3 Thanksgivings, actually.
That's too many. You got to start cutting down on friends and family.
Well,
just be like, no. I love you guys, but no.
Well, to be fair, it's probably gonna be like one or two and a half, because you know, you do the whole like trying to drive from place to place to place, and it's not all on the same day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like I do like a late lunch with my parents and my family, and then I go to my girlfriend's, and they're usually like wrapping up dinner, so I'm having dessert with them. So it's like one and a half there, and then it's a second one, you know, later in the weekend.
This is my first Thanksgiving where I'm gonna have to go to multiple places.
It's a grind.
It's an event. Yeah.
It's tough. Like you gotta pace yourself. You gotta be ready for multiple meals and multiple different types of food, because not everyone has the same thing or makes it the same way. But hey, decorating for Christmas.
Not even giving it to Just Do, though.
What are you talking about?
Christmas music already. Christmas and Thanksgiving are not a part of the same thing.
What's wrong with Christmas music?
Nothing's wrong with Christmas music.
Exactly.
Play at the correct time.
Nope.
Play at the correct time.
The correct time is now.
No.
Let Thanksgiving happen. This is when I can make it a little bit acceptable.
You're a week away. Last year at this time, we had 3 feet of snow on the ground. 2 years ago, we had 5 feet of snow on the ground.
Which means don't tempt fate.
I'm ready.
We're doing okay.
I am ready. Bring it on. Give me 20 degrees and snow. Not a lot, just a little. I don't want 2 feet, 3 feet. Just give me a foot. Give me a nice blanket.
No.
And manageable, too. Not all at once. I want it over like the course of like 3 days. Don't just dump it all at once in 2 hours and then melt it 3 days later. That's the one thing that infuriates me the most about winter lately, is we get all this snow and then it melts in like a week. Or it melts and then it refreezes and you turn into a sheet of ice.
Oh,
and
that's
how you
yeah.
almost break your ankle, like I did last 2 years ago on Thanksgiving. You remember that?
Yeah, because
I was on my way here to work Bill's Lions for Thanksgiving 2 years ago. Almost broke my ankle. Had to just spend most of the morning in the ER.
That text hit at 7:30 in the morning. Hey guys, so news.
Yeah, my ankle might be broken, but
wasn't bad or good news, just news. And all of us, including Derek Kramer, were like, "Oh well, okay, Josh isn't coming in. Something terrible has happened.
I broke something during warm-ups, and now I'm in inactive."
803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here for another hour on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Snap to Cole on 2nd and 10. In the pocket, throws across the middle. Intercepted! Dolak has done it again, returning at the 45, hurling at the 50, at the 40, crossing the field from left to right at the 35, at the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, bullseye! Oh my God, the most amazing play you will ever see from a guy who has 5 of them every game, Sean Dolak. Unbelievable!
Paul Peck there on the call from UB's 37-20 win last night. We've been mentioning it throughout the show today. The Bulls do win. They go to 7-4. They got one more game now next Tuesday against winless Kent State. Knock on wood, they should be 8-4 going into a bowl game. They're facing a winless Kent State team. But Sean Dolak, unbelievable story. He's kind of been becoming a bit of a no-name, especially since the Northern Illinois game where they got their second ranked win ever in program history. But now, I mean, he leads the FBS in tackles. Josh, after last night, he is now second in the FBS in interceptions with 5. He is tied with a group of guys, but he is tied for second with 5.
Wow.
The leader is from Cal. He has 7. He's likely not going to get there, but he's a semifinalist for the Buckus Award. The finalist will be named on November 25th. He is a finalist for the Burlsworth Trophy finalist. That award is for the best player that began their career as a walk-on. The Buckus Award is for the best linebacker in college football.
You know,
unbelievable.
Great for him. Fantastic for him. He's going to go in like the second, third round, isn't he?
Yeah, there was hopes for me thinking like, oh, you know, maybe he'll like fall to like the 4th or 5th, and like the Bills can just kind of swoop him up. And that would partially just be for like the fun story of like,
yeah,
you know,
right,
you got
right.
Andreessen, now you've got Dolak, and no, Dolak's right. awesome.
It'd be super
not
cool.
a shot. I mean, not a shot.
I mean, to be fair though, if he's this good and you want to spend a higher draft pick on him, hey.
I just don't know if it's necessarily like a huge need. I just don't know.
I guess it depends. Like, it depends on who's available in the other spots before that.
Yeah. By the way, total tackles as well. He's number one. UB's Red Murdoch a junior linebacker, is number two at 135, Dolak at 146.
What?
So they will also have another awesome linebacker next year.
That's fantastic. This is the thing I've loved about UB football over the past couple of years, is it's just like linebacker U. Like,
yeah.
It's just, where do you get your linebackers? UB.
UB.
Oh, really?
Did you draft him? No, but he's an NFL player.
Yeah.
We just kind of grabbed him. They've been a lot of fun to watch this year. A bit of a boom or bust program, to be fair, at least this year. They've had games where they just blow teams out. They've had other games where it's like, oh no, guys. All right, just wrap it up. But
yeah.
Pete Lembo, he is doing something really, really good there.
If he doesn't win MAC Coach of the Year, I will be shocked.
I think it's got to be a runaway. I want to get the tweaks. I want to get the year and the coach's name right. But he is doing something. Yes, here it is. So Pete Lembo, first year UB head coach with 7 wins. That is the first time that has been done since 1897. C.W. Dibley. I'm not convinced that's a real person.
What?
I'm not convinced that's a real person. That's not a real person. And also 1897? Come on. Who was keeping stats back then?
You know when
it was the Wild West.
Do you know when UB started their football program?
1897.
1894. This is the second head coach, likely the second head coach in UB football history, is the guy that held that record.
Yeah, Pete Lembo coming in first year, doing great. They got a win over Toledo this year as well, and Toledo, Ohio. They also played last night. They've been sort of the darlings of the MAC, at least in the regular season. They're 1-2 in terms of wins since, I think, 2016. But to go from 3-9 last year to staring the face down, at least in the regular season, 8-4, you're definitely going to go to a bowl game at that point. 6-6, it leaves up for interpretation because you're just bowl eligible. It doesn't mean you immediately get into one. 7-4, even better. And then now potentially 8-4 again. Winless Kent State team next week. And I want to say that is going to be Tuesday night. Yep, that is next Tuesday, the 26th, 7 p.m. at UB Stadium. Should be fun. I actually went to their only loss at home this year.
Oh, so it's your fault.
Yeah, it's 100% my fault.
Nice.
What are their odds to win the MAC East?
I think well,
or like get to the MAC Championship, I should say.
I think very low, because you got Ohio at 6-1 in the conference, Miami, Ohio at 6-1, Bowling Green at 5-1, and then Buffalo's at 5-2.
So I was
and the team they beat of that group, they've lost to Ohio. They beat Toledo. Toledo, though, losing last night, goes to 4-3 in the conference.
I'm diving down the rabbit hole a little bit here on this whole, you know, when UB football started, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their first season, they played 2 games. They lost both of them.
Nice.
They did not score a single point.
Nice.
You know who they played? 2 high school teams.
That's...
this is no disrespect to UB football program, but, like, that's crazy.
So good.
It's crazy. Like, again, this is the beginning stages of football too, so it's not like it was anything like
barely
we know.
A sport.
Like it's not like anything we know today. I mean, I'm looking at the team picture. There are 17 guys on the team.
Barely a sport. Yep.
There's 17.
They're
players.
Wearing sweaters.
Yeah, and they're all wearing different sweaters. By the way, none of them are matching.
So good.
But it is cool just to like look.
1897.
Look, just like to look back down this rabbit hole of like history here. It's just fun.
Can I just say how Northern Illinois was a ranked team and they are 3-4 in the MAC?
That loss should be held against Notre Dame harder.
It really should.
Great win for UB. Notre Dame, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
We were at home. It wasn't like you had to go on the road to a MAC environment.
UB beat Northern Illinois, so I mean, UB beat Notre Dame.
As I did say, though, I went to a UB game this year. First time in a long time. I used to hold season tickets. Me, my dad, his buddy, my brother also was a part of it. Like, we went for 5 or 6 years. Drew Willey was one of my favorite quarterbacks growing up. I was a big Joe Licata fan as well. And I didn't go for 10-plus years. Went to homecoming this year, and it was such a cool environment. It was a lot of fun, great crowd. They ultimately didn't win the game. Little garbage from the refs, I'm just saying. Just saying. But I really like what they're building there. Lembo mm-hmm. gives me a vibe of a guy that is not necessarily going to take the next big job. He seems like a MAC coach. That like he's taken coordinator and positional jobs elsewhere. I mean, he was just at South Carolina, but he feels like a MAC coach.
Yeah.
And
I remember talking to him, too.
I love what UB has, yeah.
He was such a great character to talk to, too, in terms of like who he is and probably in like the locker room and
which
everything.
Which threw me. I was not prepared for that.
Yeah, and if that's the culture he's creating here, it's I can see nothing but great things for UB going forward. I mean,
I think he outright called him a sleeping giant in the MAC. Yeah. I think he did. I can't remember exactly, but I've always kind of felt that way. There were years with Lembo or with Lance Leipold, and then their basketball programs as well. Yep. Felicia Leggett, Jack, and Nate Oates. That I was like, oh man, move up to a bigger conference. We've gotten better. Come on, and never materialized. But they have, I think, the ability, the foundation, everything to really have a run here. And for again, in year one. To go from 3-6 or whatever they were last year to 7-4 like that. Again, one more game at home against a winless Kent State team who also were completely blown out by Akron for the wagon wheel, by the way, for Ross Tucker was calling that game the other day. It's big. It's a lot of fun. I really, really enjoy when UB is good because, again, that was my childhood for college football. Yes, I've been a Texas fan for most of my life. But in terms of local college football, I went to a lot of UB games. And I had like a lot of nostalgia going back. Finally, I actually sat on the other side of the stadium too because my season tickets were on the other one. So like right. Going to the other side, I was like, I'd basically never been here. This is awesome. And it was really, really cool.
Brand new scenery.
Yep.
Hey, we just got an interesting tweet from Will. I was going to say, because
you were talking about anniversaries. We got another one.
Yeah. So 14 years ago, again, this tweet comes in from Will. Thanks, Will. A box score and highlights from a Bills-Bengals game. He said it came up in a Facebook memory. The Bills win 49-31 to go 2-8. The Bengals also 2-8 at the time.
So good.
They fall to 2-8, I'm assuming. This is a crazy box score. So I'm in the screenshot, I'm only able to see up to halfway or most of the way through the second quarter. But by the end of the first half, the Bills were losing 28-13 and ended up winning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is this the
49-31?
Why so serious?
The why so
game.
Serious game?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't realize that was that game. Yeah.
Stevie Johnson. All right. One of my favorite Bills of all time.
And then the next week they end up losing to Pittsburgh in overtime.
Yeah. Drought Bills, baby. Let's go.
Drought Bills. What were I want to look up real quick? What were Stevie's overall stats in that game? Because it wasn't just that he had, I think, 3 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Let me grab this. Yeah. 11 targets, 8 catches, 137 yards, 3 touchdowns. So good. Josh, oh man, he is my favorite Bill, I think, of all time, Stevie Johnson. Partially because for no reason, and I'd say that jokingly, during Darrell Revis's prime, where every great receiver is like, I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get 2 catches for 10 yards every game.
Right.
Stevie Johnson would go out there and have like 8 catches, 100 yards, and a touchdown. It was on the dot every time. It was for no reason. He was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy that Revis saw the most.
Right, exactly. And divisional matter. Opponent and everything.
Oh,
I also love looking at this box score because, like I said, up till the end of the first half, it was a pretty high scoring game. And then the second half was all Bills, literally all Bills. You had 2 touchdowns in the third quarter, 3 in the fourth quarter. Like the Bills get their first lead of the game in the fourth quarter on their 3rd touchdown of the half.
I mean, when Stevie scores, the score at that point is Cincinnati 31, Bills 14. He makes it 31-21.
Yeah.
And then, Florence has a 27-yard fumble return for a touchdown. Brian Lindell's the kicker. Oh, boy. And then Stevie Johnson, 2 more. And then Fred Jackson also gets a rushing touchdown there.
2 rushing touchdowns.
Yep.
Yeah, he had one earlier in the game. That's the thing is, like, you look at this, and it starts out pretty normal. It's 7-7 at the end of the first quarter. And then all of a sudden, it's 31-14 at the end of the half.
Jackson, 21 rushing attempts, 116 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Wow. Fitzpatrick, 21-34, 316 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. Palmer.
Oh, what a guy.
This was also the last year of the red helmets, because the next year that's when the Bills transitioned over to their current look.
Oh, man. I'm just going through these stats again, like seeing Terrell Owens is on this team. 9 targets, 3 catches, 63 yards.
Chad Ochocinco's on the Bengals.
Yep.
Like,
oh, yeah, they got him listed here as Chad Johnson.
Yeah.
6 targets, 3 catches, 20 yards, a touchdown. Owens also had a touchdown. Donald Jones is a part of this. 5 targets, 5 catches, 70 yards, and a touchdown.
Who had the fumble?
The Drought Bills. That would be the fumble return for a touchdown?
No, who fumbled it is what I'm saying.
Oh, I do not know.
I'm trying to find it here. It's not listed.
I'm looking. Oh, that would have been Cedric Benson.
Cedric Benson. I see it. I missed it.
Texas great Cedric Benson. There we go.
There's also two defensive touchdowns in this game. The fumble recovery touchdown, and then also Joseph Johnson on one of his two interceptions has a 27-yard return for a touchdown.
What a weird year. Where did the Bills ultimately go in 2010? Ooh. I mean, they're 2-8 in
this game. They're 2-8 in that game, so probably not very good.
It wasn't like they were playing well.
4-12.
You know what? Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm now remembering this year and how I felt. It was not great, Josh. It was not great. Because you want to know who was dominating college football at this time and who really frustrated me that the Bills started winning games? Think about it. Arguably one of the greatest college football quarterbacks of all time. Really only played one season, too.
I can't get Cam Newton out of my head, but that's too early.
That's correct.
I thought that was too early, but I couldn't get Cam Newton out of my head.
The Bills lost to Chicago.
It's crazy how long ago he got drafted.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, I didn't realize.
Especially, if you ever rewatch his Iron Bowl performance, it looks still like current college football. It doesn't look all
that
different.
Well, that's what
different.
I mean. Yeah. Because I'm thinking of, obviously, the glory years of Cam Newton with Carolina was like 2015, 16, 17. But to me, that's like his second, third, and fourth year. That's not him being in the league for 3, 4, 5 years at that point.
Do you remember his debut against Arizona? Gets in there. I mean, wins the Heisman Trophy. No. One of the best years in college football. I think only in terms of quarterback position, really only surpassed by Joe Burrow in 2019. Goes in his first game, throws like 400 yards.
That's crazy.
And ultimately, his entire career would not really be known for throwing.
Yeah.
But I think that was his highest passing rating total or passing yard total in his career as well as his rookie year. Just it's a wild game against Arizona where he throws like 40 yards. I think they lose. He has like 3 rushing touchdowns. Like, you watched that game and went, we're fine. And this is a team that was Jimmy Clausen led in 2010. They were abysmal, Josh, on offense. I mean, awful.
This season was also the year the Bills traded Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking here and I'm looking at like other games, by the way, at that point. That Bengals win was the Bills' second win in a row because their first win came the week before in week 10.
It's Detroit. 14-12. What a barn burner.
Yeah, great game. But I'm also looking back and I'm like, oh, highest rusher, Lynch, 2 weeks in a row in weeks 2 and 3. What happened? Where'd he go? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the year he got traded.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And then that's where we actually, I don't know who the player was, but we just had the Beast Quake celebration reenacted. Because Marshawn Lynch in 2010 with a 7-9 Seattle Seahawks team beat New Orleans in the playoffs. They have one of the greatest playoff runs of all time. And he dives backwards into the end zone. I can't remember who just did it. But yeah.
I think I might be able to find it real quick right here.
Fun enough, I mean, I remember this season for how frustrated I was. I will tell you, the 2011 season is still my favorite Drought Bill season. In terms of just like the memories I have, it's 2011 the next year. Because they play... funny enough, Kansas City in week 1, and they blow them out 41-7. And I just remember, I'm 12-ish at that point, 12, 13.
Oh, David Montgomery.
Montgomery, thank you.
Yeah.
But I was like 12, 13-ish at the time.
Wait, no, sorry. That was not.
That is not it?
Well, this one happened, this was posted September 30th.
Oh, then that's not it.
No, that's not it.
It was like this like last week. He was a college player.
Oh, see, I'm looking for. I thought you were saying.
I think
it
was a college player.
No, it was Jameson Williams.
Oh,
with the Lions.
Okay. Nope. Now I'm remembering it. Thank you.
There it is. There it is. I found it.
But that 2011 season, I just remember it again being 12, 13 years old or whatever, and I remember going on NFL Network like the next morning on Monday, so excited because they were going to show so many Bills highlights.
Yeah. Right.
Oh my gosh, they're scoring so much. And I remember maybe it was either week 2 against Oakland or going into week 3 against New England, where they were just talking about how like the entire offense was basically like fifth round and later, like everybody. and it was just, to me, looking back on it, that was not sustainable by any means. And ultimately, Fitzpatrick gets hurt. They lose a ton in a row to go 6-10. Yeah. But at the time, like after
they started
beat the
off
Patriots,
5-2 and ended 1-8.
Yeah, after they beat the Patriots, though, I was sitting there. I'm like, we're gonna have a bunch of like nobodies that are just gonna like, drag us to the playoffs. We're not that good.
I think Fred Jackson broke his leg, and he was out for the season.
Yeah, this season, this is Fred Jackson's best season. Is 2011. He was honestly like on for like offensive player of the year kind of stuff. Josh, let me pull up his stats from that season, the 2011 one. So in 10 games played, he had 934 yards rushing, 6 touchdowns, And then he had 39 receptions, 442 yards, no touchdowns. He was just everywhere. He was doing everything for them, and he's doing this at 30 years old. Oh, man, that was a really cool year. I want to pull up like the game log for that because, oh, man. 2011 Fred Jackson was different. And this is during the period, too, where they've got C.J. Spiller, and is he actually the better running back because of, you know, yards per carry and such? But, I mean, he starts off the year two straight 100-yard rushing games. Receiving, he's catching passes. Against New England, he has 74 rushing yards, 87 receiving yards. His three straight 100-yard rushing games as well against Philadelphia, the Giants, and Washington. They go 2-1 in that stretch.
He had only one 1,000-yard season in 2009.
Oh,
man.
If he had just missed like one game in that year, you're looking at like a 1,400-yard rushing season and like an 800-yard receiving season.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so frustrating. Because I love Fred Jackson. I think we all do. He's probably one of the most beloved, you know, drought-era Bills. Him, Eric Wood, Kyle Williams.
Even Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick absolutely is on there. For me, Stevie, obviously. Yep. I think for most people, he'd be up there. But yeah, oh, man.
Mount Rushmore, Bills drought era.
Fitz,
top four.
Fred, Brian Moorman, Kyle Williams. Where am I at four?
That's four.
I'll leave it there.
Wait. Yeah, four.
I'll leave it there. I feel good about that.
All right.
I feel really good about
Brian
that.
I love Brian
Moore. I'd personally swap out Brian Moorman.
This city was ready to riot when they cut him. He deserves a spot on the route, Mount Rushmore.
I personally would just.
I was there. I was ready to go.
He could be an honorable mention, sure.
No, he's like on there.
He's the fifth guy, but.
He makes perfect sense for a huge playoff drought, though, that a punter needs to be on there. That is true. I'm not gonna realistically put like a great player or two on there. Like Fitz is there for the vibes. Great guy, has memorable wins, but the stats were always frustrating. They paid him and you kind of knew it was going to go bad. You know, even the great players they had kind of hated the city, and there was never really good feelings there. McGahee, Lynch, stuff like that. Where, you know, Fred's coming from Coy College. That's awesome. Mormon's a punter. We always saw him. It was great. Kyle Williams, he's kind of there all the way to the end.
Pro Bowler, Mormon always was. He was the only Pro Bowler that came from the Bills.
Him and Kyle Williams. Williams, though, was like the underrated like defensive tackle of his generation. That if he was on a better team, more people would know who he is. Mm-hmm. You know, he just wasn't as good as like someone like Joe Thomas on a bad Browns team. But everyone was like, yeah, but he's the best left tackle in football. I can't say anything bad about him.
All right, we only got about like half hour or so left, but I'm putting the tweet out there now. Give me your Bills drought, Mount Bills Rushmore. Drought. Let's go. Check it out on Twitter right now.
It's all because it's the 14th anniversary to...
Yeah, just because the Bengals...
Why so serious
again,
game.
Thank you, Will, for tweeting this at us because this has led down a nice rabbit hole here.
One of my favorite highlights. Easily my least favorite uniforms, though, for the Bills. Easily my least favorite uniforms. Even surpassing blue pant current era. Even surpassing those.
What? Can we bring up the navy blue discussion again? Why you don't like it? Because I like it.
Bad. Well, look here. My big reason why I don't like it, honestly, is because they were really, really bad in them.
That's fair.
That's a big part. If they were good in them, they all of a sudden become better.
Well, it's the same.
I think Patriots fans would tell you the same thing. Like those uniforms they had forever were a complete change to what they had in the 80s and 90s. Where, I mean, they were wearing red or even the Drew Bledsoe era where it's bright blue. 2000s, they go to darker uniforms, and it stays forever. Why? They were winning.
Yeah.
And the Bills, I'm not saying would have absolutely changed the uniforms already, but if they were like currently still bad, we'd probably be having a discussion of, like, do we just change it back to the red helmets? Do we go back to the 90s? Maybe. I mean, teams do that. I mean, they'll change uniforms just for the sheer fact of the bad vibes. We talk about this with the Sabres all the time.
Right.
Of the
dark blue in the mid-2010s.
Yeah.
It looks like when I was watching that highlight reel earlier from the 10-game win streak, it's weird to see them in that dark blue because, wow, they were really good. But then you remember how bad everything else was around that.
Brian Colzio, by the way, not tweeting him but texting in, Eric Wood over Fitzpatrick.
Ooh.
I think that's fair.
I can listen to that.
I think that's fair.
Fitz has just – both him and Eric Wood both have that personality. But just – everything Fitz has done well, but Eric's.
I was gonna say
everything Fitz has done for the Bills since then, but Eric works with the Bills, really so it's helped, hard.
But and I don't say this negatively. I think it is an important aspect that Eric Wood now is part of the Bills broadcast,
right.
It has been for a number of years, and is good.
Fitz is just
job.
Supporter from afar.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's okay to put Eric in there.
But, and you know what? And also this too. Eric only played for the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm. Fitz was kind of a journeyman.
You can even argue Fitzmagic is more of a thing after the Bills. And that there are moments, sure, but the Fitzmagic kind of moniker sort of comes afterwards.
We've got some early ones here. Mike tweets in, Brian Moorman.
Correct. Fitz, it's objectively correct.
Fitz, okay. Fred Jackson, and Aaron Schobel.
The Aaron Schobel. All right. Okay.
We've also got one here from Eric. Kyle Williams, Mario Williams, Fred Jackson, and Fitz. That's fair.
I mean, if we're talking Mario Williams, if we're talking talent, I understand the Mario thing.
Right. That was just like a big moment. But I don't know if I could put him up there because of the fact of just other than the signing, it was like, okay, cool. You know?
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Talking a little Bills drought here on the bye week. If you want to jump in with your Mount Rushmore or even just favorite player from that era, would love to hear it. We're on for another half hour here as we get ready for Paul Hamilton and Brayton Wilson to cover Sabres Live today, as both them and One Bills Live off today and tomorrow with the Bills on the bye week. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, you're listening to WGR.
Fitzpatrick fires. Oh, caught! Steve Johnson! Touchdown, Buffalo! What a play and what a move! 28 yards!
Why so serious?
Gus Johnson on the call as well.
Gus Johnson
and Steve
calls.
Tasker. Tasker was on the call.
Tasker's
that game.
On that too. Oh, man. The Gus Johnson calls, though, are...
They bring me back.
Some of his early 2000, like, NFL calls. I mean, Stokely down the side. Yep. Iconic. Yep. So good.
Gus Johnson, any call. Iconic.
Here's my only issue. Maserati Marv. We needed to be better there.
Yeah.
We needed to be better. That didn't need to happen. No. That needed to be better.
It was okay.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not special.
No, that's fair. All right.
Marvin Harrison Jr. in college kind of deserved to be special.
Yeah.
that man, he is at Ohio State, he was truly unbelievable. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We got some fun tweets on the Bills drought Mount Rushmore. We'll get to those here in a second, but let's go to the phones. We've got Walter on the line. Walter, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. How's it going? I just wanted to call in, and I was at the game Sunday, and just the that run. I mean, I've been to about, you know, easy 100 games, and what an iconic moment. And in many ways, regardless how the season goes, I mean, this year will be remembered for that. Josh Allen might be remembered for that, regardless of whether we win a Super Bowl. But I think we've turned the corner, because you know what, 3-4 years ago, McDermott would have never have gone for that play. He would have gone with the field goal. So that may bode well. Love your show, guys. All the best, and looking forward to the stretch drive.
Thanks for the call, Walter. I can't totally agree on the McDermott thing. We had a call yesterday on Show from the Bulldog that mentioned in the 13 seconds game, the Bills' first drive, McDermott went for it twice on fourth down as they scored. He is a guy that goes for it on fourth down. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to his appearance with Show on the Bulldog earlier this week. I mean, he broke down what they do for fourth down calls, how they get to ultimately their destination, if they're going to go for it or not. It's
such a great breakdown.
I loved it. It's like a 2.5-minute answer. Mm-hmm. He breaks down like in the week leading up to the game and then in the game. It's so good. Josh Allen's absolutely going to be remembered for that play. I mean, if he wins the MVP, that will be the play that is shown. I think Mike Greenberg on ESPN nailed that this week. That's going to be the play that is shown in a few months when he wins the MVP. I hope, though, the game outside of the people that went there isn't like this super memorable one. Honestly.
I hope that's not the only thing he's remembered for. Or like that's his big play. I want to be like thinking him throwing a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
The only reason it will be memorable is if the Bills go on to beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. Like, if you think back and look back.
It'll be like it started there.
Right, you look back at the season, they had their number in the regular season, then they finally did it in the playoffs. I mean, even if they don't win the Super Bowl, if they just beat the Chiefs in the playoffs, that will make this past game memorable.
It's going to be remembered. I mean, because it was very good game. I just hope that that's not like, I hope it's not the pinnacle of the season, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my biggest issue. I don't want that to be the pinnacle of the season.
But it also depends how the season ends. If the season ends with a playoff loss, this past game might be the pinnacle of the season. Just because of the fact that hey, you can hang your hat on another Bills win in the regular season over the Chiefs, but you didn't have anything to show for it in the playoffs again, regardless of who you lose to.
Yep.
And again, if they win over the Chiefs and make it to the Super Bowl, or just win over the Chiefs and go to the AFC Championship game, this game will be remembered because it's a, again, a, that it started back there and you had your, you had their number in the regular season and you made it work in the postseason for once.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way it gets really remembered.
Yep. On to, though, our little fun conversation today. Bills drought Mount Rushmore.
This is
Bills are on the bye week. It's the 14th year anniversary of Stevie Johnson. I mean, you heard the call there. Stevie Johnson, why so serious play? He's one of my favorite Bills of all time.
He's on my Mount Rushmore. Mine is...
He's not on my Mount Rushmore. He is my favorite Bill of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's or kind of that era, I guess, but he's not on the Mount Rushmore.
Mine is Kyle Williams, Eric Wood, Stevie Johnson, and Fred Jackson. I wanted to give it to Fitz, but just like we talked about, the fact that he bounced around so much, it's... tough to look at it that way.
Yep.
My favorite response so far, though, is just a lot of people are throwing in the same names and everything like that, but when you guys flesh it out and make it into more of like what it would actually look like, it's great. So Sean tweets in, Kyle Williams, Eric Wood, Stevie Johnson, and Fred Jackson. Monuments of Mormon Molds and Antoine Winfield around the grounds. Like that's so good. Like I'm picturing like in the middle of downtown Buffalo, there's this giant monument to Williams, Wood, Stevie, and Fred Jackson. And then also in the same park, there's little tiny plaques for like Eric Molds, Brian Mormon, and Anton Winfield, and then probably some other people as well. Like it's just, I don't know, it's just making me laugh. It's funny. But there's a lot of great responses in here. Some off the wall ones too. I mean, a lot of fits.
Eric Molds
is kind of coming in there too, which is nice. That was my first Bills jersey, an Eric Molds jersey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
London Fletcher.
Yep.
That's a good one. Saw that pop up. Lee Evans.
I mean, the Lee Evans, J.P. Lossman deep ball to Lee Evans, one of the prettier sights in football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a bad quarterback, that man could throw a beautiful deep ball.
Right. Nate Clements.
Yeah.
Jairus Byrd.
Is Lee Evans forgotten because, like, Stevie Johnson was more, like, of a well-known, and I feel like...
He was more of a personality.
Yeah.
Lee Evans wasn't as much of a personality, but at times...
It helped, though, that I think Stevie was just the overall better receiver.
Yeah, but there were times, though, where Lee Evans was right there with him in terms of the greatness and everything, but it... Man, if that team had a quarterback...
Oh, they had two of the best receivers, arguably in football.
Yeah, it just
because you had the deep threat in Lee Evans. He was a burner.
Are there any teams like that right now where you have these two great receivers and you're just subpar quarterback play? I mean, before Amari Cooper got traded, you could maybe say it about the Browns.
Him, Cedric Tillman's really come on.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy as well. Figure something out.
The Broncos for years.
Broncos, yeah,
because it was Cortland Sutton, it was Jerry Jeudy, it was a few guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think.
Because there's not really a team that's set up like that right now, I don't think.
Carolina was for a little while because you kind of knew DJ Moore was a guy.
Yep.
But it was sort of just him. Robbie Anderson's fine, but not anything special.
Is it Robbie now or is it Chosen or which one's he on?
Not sure. He was going by Robbie Anderson at the time, though. That him and DJ Moore were together.
Right, back there, yeah. Okay.
Not sure. Yeah, I don't know if really like
I'm just trying to think because that Bills team was so historic, or the Bills era was so historic. In the worst way possible, but it's also, I wonder if we're kind of actually seeing it again with the Jets, because the Jets are approaching 17 years.
Love them.
They are so much. Rapidly approaching 17 years. That's, you know what? No, that's actually probably a good team to pick, because they have Garrett Wilson, and they had Mike Williams, and now they have Devontae Adams, and they have a subpar quarterback.
Yeah. I also love the Aaron Schobel shouts.
Yeah, it's great. Also,
you think of Bill's drought pass rushers. Mario always comes up first.
Mm-hmm.
Schobel, though, was also a guy averaging, having 12.5, 14.5, 13.5 sack seasons where you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Terrence McGee should be getting more love.
Terrence McGee, yeah. I already got someone tweeting at me that I've snubbed him.
You know one that I haven't seen at all? Willis McGahee.
No, I mean, a very exciting draft pick coming out of Miami. Yeah. He has the terrible knee injury, but there was the feeling of like, oh, Willis McGahee's going to play for the Buffalo Bills. Like, that's really cool. He also gets lost in the shuffle of a lot of drought Bills running backs.
Yeah.
He also snubbed the city. Yeah. And like, you know, he like on his way out. That's why I feel like not a lot of people.
That's true.
Care about
Mahe. Because that's the thing is like a lot of these players. Some of them are just very good, and but most of them are fan favorites because that's that era of the Bills is when you just kind of fall in love with players because they give you great moments. Because you're not going to have a great season, but you have a great moment every once in a while. Like, why are you so serious with Stevie Johnson?
Yep.
And it's, I don't know, it's just fun to look back on this. You know, it's a great bi-week discussion, too, just to remember some drought Bills.
Truly terrible football teams with some bright spots in there.
Yeah.
I mean, you look back at this era, and it's why I've enjoyed, obviously, this one so much.
And thank God we have Josh Allen.
Yeah. Yes. But I mean, even the players around him. We were talking with Sal yesterday about this, too, of, like, you look around at some of these players they developed. Like, a guy like Christian Benford would have been a stud on these Bills drought teams that, like, we would constantly talk about. Look at Jared Bird. I mean, I think he had, what, 6 interceptions in one season? The same with guys like Aaron Williams. Also another Texas guy, Hookem. But now, like, they're just you know, considered good players on these Bills teams. Like, we don't run around and scream about them. Sometimes we do. Some of us do. But they're kind of they're a good team. And it does sometimes become just all about Josh Allen.
Jarris Bird in 2009 had 9 interceptions.
Nine in one
season.
I think it was maybe like he had 6 straight.
Oh, okay.
I think it was in 6
2012, straight games. 2012 he had 5. 2013 he had 4.
He was good.
He only never mind. I was gonna say he only had interceptions on the Bills, but he had 2 in New Orleans or 3 in New Orleans, and that's it.
Okay.
He had 25 interceptions in his career, and 22 of them were on the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
But he also played 4 other, like, he only played 5 years on the Bills, and he had 22 interceptions. That feels like a typo.
It does.
It's crazy.
I'm going through Aaron Schobel now here, man. We got to talk about him more. Just like how good he is. 78 sacks. I mean, through a 17-game average. He played in the 16-game era, but through a 17-game average, he's averaging 10. He's second all-time for the Bills in sacks, only behind, obviously, Bruce Smith, who leads the NFL all-time in sacks. Second-team All-Pro. He's really good. His problem, though, is it's like this 3-year run here where it's like, oh, he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was really good most of his career. Just amazing for a short bit in terms of sack numbers, but really good his entire career. Tackles for loss, he's like in the double digits basically every year. His last year, by the way, is just impressive. Solo tackles, 34. Tackles for loss, 17. QB hits, 17. 10 sacks. And that's his last year at Buffalo. He also only played in 5 games in 2008, his second last year. So, I mean, his stats should probably be even higher. He's great.
This is a funny tweet from Steve. The drought lasted so long, it's hard to pick 4 players. That's very true.
So good.
Because there's a lot of guys you could pick for this. Also, another tweet from Joe. He added in there LeSean McCoy. I don't know how I feel about that. Because McCoy was only here for 4 years, and two of them were technically playoff years. 2018 was not a playoff year. What am I saying?
Yeah, just 2017.
But still, 1 year, but one of his 4 years was a playoff year.
Yeah, and then, I
can't.
McCoy, I can't. I think also their running backs I have more fond memories of.
Yeah.
I love McCoy because he was great for Josh Allen's early career, them having him there already. And he was sort of, for a little while there, kind of the only offense the Bills could muster with Tyrod.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I think one of my lasting memories from like when I was younger was just kind of the hype around C.J. Spiller, but then just...
Oh, yeah.
It just kind of like, not trailed off, but it just never really amounted to what it was hyped up
to. Well, yeah, because it was the 1 year where he's averaging like 6 yards a carry. I want to get that year up here real quick. But it was that, and then you have the, you know, him and Fred Jackson are taking turns.
Yeah, it was 2012.
Mm-hmm.
He had 1,200 yards, 6 yards per carry, 6 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. And then even receiving 459 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next year, similar amount of carries, similar games.
Only 4.6 yards per carry.
Yeah, it drops down immediately and then never picks up again.
Nope.
And to be fair, too, that was his 3rd year. So it was that you were waiting constantly. This guy out of Clemson, how good is he going to be? It's also, you know, of course, they took another running back when they took Spiller.
Yeah.
It just never materialized past that season. Because then, I mean, that 2013 is the second highest total, just over 900, and then it drifts away, and then he kind of lingers around the NFL for a few years, ultimately retiring, or at least his last year in the NFL is 2017 with Kansas City.
This is yet another fond memory look back of look how far we've come.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is just like, this is fun and all, but it's just great to be like, you know what? This is great.
Eventually, we'll do this with the Sabres.
One can hope.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. Coming up at 12 o'clock, Paul Hamilton and Brayton Wilson will have you covered for Sabres Live today. There's no Sabres Live or One Bills Live. And then from 1 to 3, myself and Derek Kramer will have you the rest of the mid-morning into the afternoon, Shelton Bulldog, then from 3 to 7. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh May. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Before we get out of here, let's go back to the phones. We've got Mike here on the line. Mike, how are we doing today?
Hey, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon yourself. Good morning. You're doing well.
Hey, yeah, I wanted to talk about, you know, every NFL season that I've ever been a part of. I think I've never seen one that's so stacked as far as the playoffs. I think these playoffs is going to be stacked, and the one seed has never been more important than this year as far as the playoff teams is concerned. Secondly, as far as how the Bills fared without their two top receivers and being able to beat Kansas City and going forward, how they put the league on notice, I believe. You know, I think Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean is just, they're just geniuses when it comes to just making the right moves and the right decisions. It always turns out right for the Bills. But I just wanted to see what you thought about the playoffs and the seeding as far as the competition this year.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. I think Bean and McDermott have put together a really good team, and even missing a little bit on the wide receiver kind of run there, they answered it quickly. And they got it done, 3 weeks before the trade deadline. So the Cooper addition was great. I will say, I don't actually think the AFC playoffs are stacked. I think just everyone is closer to the bottom. There isn't really any true elite teams that are running away with it that you just think are a wagon. Even Baltimore, who's scoring a ton on offense, can't stop a nosebleed on defense. Buffalo has dealt with injuries throughout the year, and they're, you know, up until Kansas City, they're two wins against two of their three games against above 500 opponents. They lost both, Baltimore and Houston. Kansas City can't really do anything on offense unless it's third down of the red zone. There doesn't seem to be this like clear top of the mountain when it comes to the AFC playoffs this year. And though, to your point, though, I think that's maybe where the one seed does matter, because there could be some chaos in the AFC playoffs this year, whether it be like a Houston team going to Arrowhead and just beating them, because Kansas City's not as good as they have been in previous years. Baltimore, same thing, going from they look like the cream of the crop to they might be a wild card team, and Pittsburgh might truly pass their well on their way now to win the AFC North. I think it's going to be a really fun playoff this year, because everyone, it feels, is much closer. There doesn't feel like there's that bad team. There also doesn't feel like there's that great team, which we've had for years.
That's like you said, that's the most fun part about it, and it's good that that's the case, because the NFC is the exact opposite. It's the Lions and everyone else. Like, it's not even the 49ers anymore. It's just the Lions. You know, like, yeah. At least the AFC can save us by saying, hey, here's some of these great teams that will give you great games. Everyone else is bad. Good luck.
Good luck. That's going to do it for us today. Coming up next, Paul Hamilton and Brayton Wilson covering Sabres Live today from 12 to 1. And then I'll be back on with Derek Kramer from 1 to 3. You're listening to WGR.